And thank the rest of the committee for allowing me to be here. It's nice to see him and his wife, Kimberly. We were in the same home group in California for 10 or 11 years. So it's good to see them. It's good to see Mac and his lovely wife, Kay, here. And it's just good to be here. I know I'm not your first choice. I'm probably not as glib as they are. I'm probably not as smart. I'm probably not as funny, but I'm definitely something that they're not. I'm here tonight. I got to tell you, if Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work, I wouldn't be standing up here tonight. I want to thank Lynn for her talk this afternoon. I leaned over and told Tom, I said, "You're not going to hear anything that spiritual tonight." Tom looked at me and said, "I know." So, but I mean, I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I mean, look at me. I mean, I don't look like an alcoholic. Now look at the people sitting around you. That's right. You look like alcoholics. See, I come from a good home. I was born in Danville, Illinois. I had great parents. Mom and Dad were an alcoholic. I'm not from a dysfunctional family. My parents didn't put me in the closet. They didn't chain me up, beat me. They didn't abuse me. What my parents did is provide a good home for me and my two brothers to grow up in. And my dad worked on the railroad for over 50 years, and my mom took care of me and my two brothers, and I had a great childhood. I'm not one of those alcoholics that's searching for my inner child that I'd like to nourish and carry a little teddy bear in a backpack for. If I ever find my inner child, I'll choke the son of a bitch unconscious. I'll tell you that. I've been trying to mature up here in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. I haven't made it yet. So, but childhood ain't my problem. I'm going to tell you that. It wasn't great, but I tell you, it's been long. But I played sports in high school. I won 9 varsity letters. I played football, basketball. I run track. I had offers to go to college and play basketball, and that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did that inventory. I read it to my sponsor. And then we started talking about me and things I never analyzed. I never analyzed my childhood. I didn't think back, and I don't go over it, and it's gone. I'm trying to be here today, and that's hard enough for me. So I don't look back, and so, but we talked about some things. And I grew up being a liar. Now, my parents didn't show me how to do that. I picked that up on my own because that's the easier, softer way. And it's easier to be a liar than it is to tell the truth. When you tell the truth, it's just out there. When you're a liar, you can be anything you want to be anytime. I've been an airline pilot. I've been a truck driver. I've been a dentist. I've been a gynecologist. I love being a liar. I'd do it today if I didn't have to make amends. I was a thief growing up. I used to steal stuff and give it to my friends so they'd like me. And, you know, it's just easier to steal it, walk out shoplifting it. You got the money in your item, you're a double winner. I like that concept. And then I cheated all the time because I never wanted to work hard and earn anything. Give me, lend me, can I have, let me borrow. That's it. That was me. And that's how I was as a kid growing up. My parents never taught me that. And that's not why I'm an alcoholic. The other thing growing up I wanted to be is macho. Look at me. This is sad. You know, I looked like Mr. Peepers. I was afraid of the dark. I couldn't tell anybody about that. I mean, I know you macho guys here in Reno and Sparks. I know you weren't afraid of the dark, but I was. And I was ashamed of that. And I couldn't tell anybody about that. So I used to hang out with juvenile delinquents after ball practice. Ducktail haircuts, long sideburns, black leather jackets with zippers and doodads all over it. And these guys were called juvenile delinquents. And they used to have back then what was called rumbles. And that's 40 or 50 guys in a parking lot or a vacant lot beating hell out of each other with baseball bats and bicycle chains. And these guys carried zip guns and switchblade knives. And that was an adrenaline rush for a wimp like me. And that scared me, and I couldn't tell anybody about that fear. And I'd watch you guys cut people and fight them. And I'd hit somebody with a brick or a club at one of these deals, and then I'd worry about them. Well, that's not funny. I'm a sensitive individual. And I'd worry about if they were hurt, and I'd go home and wonder about that, and that made me feel like a wimp and a wussy, and I hated those feelings. Now, that's how I was before I ever took a drink of alcohol. My first drink, I was at a party in Danville. It was a hot summer night. My girlfriend brought me over a big iced tea glass full of sloe gin and 7-Up. Now, I didn't know what sloe gin was, but the drink was red. It had ice in it. I took a drink of it. It tastes like strawberry Kool-Aid. That was my drink of choice back then. I love strawberry Kool-Aid. So I chugged like that glass of sloe gin and 7-Up down. And nothing happened. I hear men speakers stand at these podiums and say they took that first drink, it went into their tummy, they got warm, went out to the tip of their fingers. All these guys got 6 feet four, 240 pounds, and their pimples fell off. And that didn't happen to me. I drank it down. I gave her the glass, said, "Would you get me another one?" She brought another one to me, and I drank that one down. Nothing happened. I didn't put on an old wrinkled trench coat and get a bottle of wine, shoot it in a paper bag, and head to Skid Row. I didn't plan on being an alcoholic. I didn't talk to my school counselor saying, "Hey, what do I got to do to be an alcoholic? I want to be up in Reno some Labor Day talking. There's a claim to fame." That just wasn't one of my goals in life. And I wasn't drinking for the taste or the effect or what alcohol was doing to me or for me or the things I've heard here in AA. I was drinking for one reason and one reason only. All my buddies at that party were drinking. They were having a great time. They were dancing and laughing, hugging and munching their girlfriend in the corner, and I can't do that. I'm self-conscious. I'm self-centered. I'm into me. I don't want to dance. I don't know how, but I don't want you to say no if I ask you to dance. I don't want to talk to you. You're going to think I'm stupid. And so I thought if I drank like those guys were drinking, I could do the things and have the fun they were having. And that's why I drank that night. And I drank almost a gallon of sloe gin in 30 minutes. Nothing happened. There was no big deal. 20 minutes later, I found out where sloe gin got its name. I got drunk as a bicycle. I went into a blackout. They took me home that night. I passed out. And the next morning when I come to, I'm puking red stuff up all over the bedroom. I'm puking up everything I had eaten and drank that night. And something else is funny. I can't remember how I got home. You see, I didn't know what a blackout was back then. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found out for me, a blackout is an indication I have a problem drinking. A blackout is when I consume alcohol, I go out and do whatever it is I'm going to do that night, and the next morning, I have no recollection about all or parts of that night. I have amnesia. That's called a blackout. I don't know if you drank in blackouts or not. None of my business, but I drank from the first time I drank, and when I look back over my drink, and I can see that's true. I used to drink, you know, I'd be drinking and stuff, and then we'd go to a party, me and my wife or my girlfriend, and we'd come home the next morning. I'd come to, I don't remember being at the party. We'd go to a movie, I don't remember the movie. I'd go in a bar, I'd be in there drinking, I'd get ready to leave. I don't know if you've done this. I walk out to get in my car, and it's gone. I walk back in, I call the police and say my car's been stolen. A lot of people leave the bar then because the police are coming. We walk out with the officers and my car's parked right there. And I said, "I guess they brought it back, officer." And that's a blackout. And then I'd wake up in some dark place. I don't know where I'm at. I'm in bed. There's something in bed with me. The hair is all matted down on it. It should have been tagged by the Humane Society. I don't know where this beast came from. Now I'm full of fear. I got to get the hell out of there. I don't want to wake this up because I'm going to get hurt. Those are blackouts. Those are indications I had a problem drinking. I didn't know that. I missed 3 days of school with a terrible hangover, my head pounding, my stomach upset. I went back to school 3 days later, and the guys told me about that night. They said I was dancing and laughing and funny. Some guy said something, and I punched his ticket. And when they told me about that night, what I felt inside was a part of those guys. I didn't remember any of that night, but evidently I had a great time. And so I felt a part of those guys. I liked that. Now, I didn't turn into a blazing alcoholic after that and get the shakes in study hall when I didn't drink. I drank when I could get it. When I drank, I got drunk. When I drank, I got in fights because I'm full of fear and I got to keep you away from me. I don't want you to know about that fear. And so I'm getting in trouble and I'm stealing and I'm fighting. And as I get older, the fights get worse. Now, I have this scholarship to go play basketball at this university. They're willing to pay my way. And 2 weeks before I graduate, I have a committee in my head now. And the committee's talking to me. And the committee says, "What if you go to that college and don't make that basketball team?" What if you go to that college and you get on that basketball team and you don't get grades good enough to stay on that team? That scared me. I don't want to go to college and look like a fool. I don't want to look stupid. I don't want to look like I don't have any talent. And I'm full of fear. I don't want to go to college with all those adults. So I made a keen alcoholic decision one night when I was drinking. I quit high school. It made sense to me at the time. You can't go to college on a scholarship if you don't graduate from high school. So I quit. That's better than facing the fear. 2 weeks later, I'm drinking and I made another keen alcoholic decision. I joined the Marine Corps. If you're a wimp and a wussy and you're afraid of the dark, going into the Marine Corps is a bad deal. I should have joined the Navy. I just want you to know that. I'm on a train going up to Chicago to get sworn in. I'm sitting next to a guy in a black leather jacket with a ducktail haircut and long sideburns. He's drinking out of a little brown bottle. I want to hang out with this guy in Chicago because I'm full of fear. I'm leaving home for the first time. The wheels of the train ain't moved yet. But I want to hang out with this guy. And he says, hey, do you want a drink of this? And I said, sure. And I took the bottle and I chug-a-lug two or three big mouthfuls of it. It was whiskey. I don't know how you drink whiskey at the age of 17. But I'll tell you what I did. I sprayed that crap all over the seats in front of me. I had whiskey coming out my nose. My eyes are watering. I can't breathe. This guy's looking at me funny. And I want to hang out with him and I want to look tough. And so I wiped off my face. I handed him the bottle and I said, that was pretty good. He said, you want another drink? I said, I can't breathe right now. I drank to fit in. I drank to be a part of. I got sworn in and we flew down to Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego. I went through boot camp scared and homesick. I was afraid. I couldn't tell the guys about that fear because I want to be macho. And I learned to put a facade out there. I learned to act like what I thought a macho guy should act like, and I got through boot camp. I ended up in the infantry at Camp Pendleton in 1962. The Cuban crisis happened. We went down the coast and through the canal, and I'm scared to death. We're going to war. I can't tell those guys about that fear because Marines ain't afraid, except I was. I was ashamed of that. Nothing happened then. We come back through the canal and we headed to the Far East for 13 months. The first night we unpacked our gear and the guy said, hey, Frank, we're going out and get drunk. You want to get drunk with us? I felt a part of those guys when they asked me to go out with them. I said, yes. We went out in a Ville that night. We bought a Typhoon fifth of sake, held about 2 gallons. We started past that bottle of sake around. These guys are chug-a-lugging it. They're doing the male bonding act, punching each other and hugging and shit, you know. And the bottle got to me, and I chug-a-lugged 3 or 4 big mouthfuls of it. I don't know how you drank sake at the age of 17. I sprayed that crap all over their shoes. I got sake coming out my nose. My eyes are watering. I can't breathe. They're laughing and pointing at me, and I hate being humiliated and embarrassed, and I feel bad, and I feel like a wimp, and they're laughing and pointing, and the bottle come around, and I chug-a-lug some more, and I puked it up. And I learned something that night. If you're going to be an alcoholic, you cannot let looking bad bother you. You have got to hang in. I think that's important. Everybody, you hear people all over the place in AA now at meetings, especially in Southern California. I'm an alcoholic and a dope fiend. I'm an alcoholic and a crack monster. Well, you know what? It doesn't take any talent to be a heroin user or a crack monster. If you inject that crap into your system, you will become addicted to it. I don't know any social heroin users. If you're going to be an alcoholic, though, you have got to work at it and hang in. One beer, one shot don't do it for you. You've got to be able to drink and drink and then spend your paycheck on it. You've got to ignore your bills. You've got to start hanging out in the bars. You've got to ignore your family. You've got to go into the restroom in these bars. If you're macho and you come out and you've wet down yourself, that makes you look like a champ. Park your car up on the lawn, go to jails and nut houses, and you have to do that one day at a time for years to be an alcoholic. I hung in. I think that's important. And, you know, the bottle kept coming around, and I kept drinking it, and then I finally held enough sake down. I'm going to tell you what alcohol did for me. I don't know what it did for you. But I drank enough of that sake that I looked at those 5 or 6 other Marines I was drinking with, and I realized something. These guys are punks. Why am I hanging out with these sissies? When I drank, I became all I could be. I didn't need anybody. You see, I didn't need you when I drank. I can create the atmosphere and the excitement I need. And I left those guys and went out drinking on my own, and I'm drinking in another bar. I'm shooting pool with a Marine from another unit. He said something I took offense to, and I hit him in the face with a pool cue. In the movies, it looked cool. He's laying there bleeding. They're calling for the MPs, and I'm full of fear because I'm going to the brig. I don't want to go to the brig. I don't want to be locked up. I'm 17-year-old. I'm scared to death. I shouldn't have done that. I knew I shouldn't have done it. So I'm full of fear, and I run out of that bar down through the alleys in Hinoco, and I go in another bar, and I start ordering shooters, and I drink those. The more of those things I drink, something funny happens. That fear dissolves and goes away. I am not afraid of going to the brig anymore. I figure if the MPs walk in that bar, they're not going to take me alive. We're going to fight it out right there. And then I start bragging to the Marine sitting next to me about hitting that guy. That's how I get when I drink. I don't care about responsibility. I don't care about my actions. I don't care who I hurt or whose life I walk through. I don't care about paying bills on time. I don't care about being honest. I don't care about fidelity. I don't care about anything when I drink but me, because I am the mighty I am. And then I look down at the end of the bar, and there's a Nissan sitting there, and I'm a sucker for a pretty face. Women have been able to soak me for every dime I've got all my life. And she slid up next to me, and she asked me to buy her a drink, and I'm a nice guy, so I bought her a drink. And then she starts telling me this story about her mom that needs surgery. And I tell you, it broke my heart. It broke my heart, so I gave her some more money, and her and I trudged the road of happy destiny to her hooch. I like to stand here and tell you we had such a great time, she remembers it to this day. It was over too quick for me to remember it. And then that embarrassed me and hurt my little macho ego and my little attitude. I was all embarrassed and ashamed. So when she went to clean up, I stole my money out of her headboard and set her house on fire. It just made sense to me at the time. And I went back to the base and passed out. And at Reveille the next morning, I come to and I'm puking up everything I had eaten, drink in the Ville that night. I'm sicker than a dog. My head's pounding. And I have no recollection of what had went on in town that night. I don't remember a doggone thing. And I'm in the head throwing up, and the guys start telling me the MPs are looking for who hit that guy. And that fear come back. Now I know I'm going to the brig. I'm in trouble. I shouldn't have done that. And then they tell me about the fire in the Ville. You see, my father hadn't raised me to act that way. I never heard him raise his voice to my mom. They were married over 50 years. And I didn't know how I was going to make that right. I was worried about that. And I felt a lot of guilt and shame over that. But I found out a secret that morning in Okinawa. I opened up my locker, and a big red bottle in there with a red dot on it, and that's called Akadama wine. I took that bottle of wine down that morning, and I chug-a-lugged some of it, and I didn't puke it up. I drank some more of that wine, and I went out to formation. By the time the formation was over and I walked back into barracks, something funny had happened. My headache was gone. My stomach settled down. I wasn't sick no more. I didn't have a hangover. I don't know what that tells you, but what that tells me is if I drink in the morning, I don't have to be sick. I went right back to that locker, got that bottle of wine out, poured some in a canteen cup, and started drinking it. 20 minutes later, I started to brag about hitting that guy with a pool cue. I started to brag about setting that woman's house on fire. You see, I didn't care about consequences when I drank. I don't know about you, but I didn't care about what people thought, what they did, what happened. It just didn't matter to me when I drank. I cared about me. I became a morning drinker and a daily drinker at the age of 17. All my money went on booze and women in the bars, and I became a bar fighter. I'm too light to fight, too thin to win. I developed the technique of ambush. Back then, they had big glass ashtrays and big glass bottles, and I would use those, and I'd make a stripe, and they'd take it away from me. Then they'd restrict me to my base, and they'd restrict me to the barracks. If you'd have walked up to me over any time and said, you know what, Frank, every time you drink, you get in trouble. I could have given you reasons why that's not true. I don't know about you, but it ain't my fault. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a victim. Now, you guys tell me if this ain't true. If you're in a bar and some guy lips off and you smack him with a bottle, is it your fault? Nope. It's his fault. He needs to learn how to talk to people. If he hadn't said that to me, I wouldn't have hit him with the bottle. So it ain't my fault. It's his fault. Duty NCO said, shut up and go hit the rack. I smacked the duty NCO. Nobody tells me to shut up. That ain't no way to talk to another person. So it ain't my fault. It's the duty NCO's fault. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I blamed everybody and everything for all my problems. It was never me. I blamed my wife, the kids, the job, the police. I blamed everybody. I came into my home group, and the old-timers in that group snapped me up and said, you want to see what the problem is, Slim? Go look in the mirror. The 12 steps in that big book are made for you to work, not the people around you. Your wife don't have to work this program. Your kids don't have to work it. Your boss don't have to work it. The people on the streets or in malls don't have to work it. You have to work the 12 steps and become different. You are the one that has to change, and I didn't know that. I ended up getting in a lot of trouble in Okinawa. Cab drivers, I figured, were ripping us servicemen off. I decided to get some of my money back one night. That man fought back, and I beat his face in with a rock. That man almost died. My father flew over to Okinawa. I was in the brig. I just begged the Marine Corps not to throw me out. And it was 1963, and he met with a commanding general, and he paid for that guy's surgery and paid for his retirement, gave the cab company some money, and some deal was cut somewhere, because by the time paperwork went through after my court-martial to get me released from that brig and still in the Marine Corps, it was about 337 days. If you'd have told me that I was locked up almost a year behind alcohol, I could have told you reasons why that ain't true. I could rationalize and justify everything that happened to me. It was not my fault. They let me out of that brig then, and they sent me to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. I met a girl in Illinois when I was on leave, and we got married, and I took her down there with me. She wants me to stay home and be a husband. I'm a bar drinker. I like the intelligent guys and the beautiful women in those places. Now we're all in AA. Ain't that something? And I don't know how you guys would get out of the house, but I'll tell you what I'd do is I'd start a fight with her and make it look like it's her fault. And then we'd be having that cuss fight that alcoholics have, and I can't drink in a noisy place. So I got to get the hell out of there. So I'd leave the house. That'd give me the reason I'd go out in the bars and drink. And then I'd end up getting in a fight with somebody, hitting them with a bottle or an ashtray. And then I'd go in another bar and I'd be in there drinking. I'd lock eyes with some honey and I don't feel like a man. I got to be validated. And in my mind, that's what guys do that ain't, you know, that don't feel like a man. And so her and I'd lock eyes and then we'd go off and trudge the road of happy destiny to her place. And then I'm laying there sober enough and then I start to think, and you should never drink and think. That's a bad deal. And I'm thinking about that wife at home, and what I realize is I'm having the feelings you have when you're a liar. I'm having the feelings that you have when you're unfaithful. And I can't go home and look at that woman now, so what I do is stop and have a couple of shooters and a beer. Now what my head says is, this is just a guy thing. It's what guys do. It ain't no big deal. So I can go home, and I walk in the house, and she says, "Where have you been?" Now I hate that question. Now I got to lie to her. I wouldn't be a liar if she didn't ask that question. So it ain't my fault I'm lying. It's her fault. And then we're having another cuss fight. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is my wife is none of my business. It's not my job to tell my wife what to do. It's not my job to tell her what to wear. It's not my job to tell her what to cook for dinner. Not my job to tell her how to clean that house. My sponsor told me, if you don't like what your wife cooks for dinner, cook your own. But keep your mouth shut. Do not say nothing to her. All the women are clapping just because they can't cook. Oh, did that come out? That was only a thought. I wasn't supposed to say that. I'm sorry. Doggone it, that was just supposed to be up here. Told me if I didn't like how that house looked, to clean it myself and never say anything to her. I had to learn that the 12 steps and this program is made for me to work, not her. She is absolutely none of my business. Then we have a kid, and I don't know how to treat kids. Kids cry, they make messes, they break things, they crap in their diapers. I mean, what's up with that? Kids ought to be born about 12-year-old and potty trained. And then I'd shake her, and I'd throw her in the crib, and she'd cry, and my wife would fight, and then I feel that guilt and that shame. I know I'm a bad father, and the only way to take that guilt and shame away is a couple of drinks of whiskey. And then my head says, you're just instilling discipline. You're just teaching that kid, that's all. You see, alcohol allowed me to lie to myself and allow me to do the things I thought was right. And then it's back out in the bars again. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is kids are little people. And that's what they do when they grow up. They make messes, they cry, they spill things, they break things. And my sponsor told me, never put your hands on your children unless you're going to put your arms around them and give them a hug. He said, quit raising your voice in the house and quit cussing in the house. Your kids don't need to hear that filthy bar language. So I had to clean my language up at home. I had to quit using the F word and had to quit using the language that I used out in the bars. He says, your wife and your kids don't deserve to hear that. And I had to change even that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, that don't make you macho. That makes you a mental cripple trying to express himself forcibly. Stop it. And I had to learn that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to learn that I needed to change. Then I got called into the CO's office one day, and they issued me a rifle with a telescope on it, live ammunition, sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam. And Vietnam is not my problem. It has never been my problem. I am my problem. In California, I get tired of hearing guys whine about it. Jerk yourself into 2005, for Christ's sakes. Get out of there and get in the present. And that's what I was told by the old-timers in my home group. But I'll tell you what my problem was when I got to Vietnam. It was 67, 68. I was up at Khe Sanh and Khon Tien. I was a sniper. I was full of fear. I can't tell anybody about it. I'm ashamed of that. And I found out a secret in Vietnam. 151 proof rum. Put that in my canteens. Drink that. I'm bulletproof and invisible. Now what I can do is go out and do those patrols I got to do to show everybody how macho I am. I can do those things and then come back in that harbor site, drink that stuff, and it takes the guilt and shame away. And alcohol just saved my sanity over there, that's all. Alcohol saved my sanity. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous after an inventory is I can't undo my past. I can't change anything I've done in my past. I know there's people sitting here today, there's some things all of us would like to change. But I can't undo those things. What I can do today is do Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I put enough nows together, I'll have a sober tonight. That's it. I can't put enough nows together to change my past. I can't close the door on it. I need to remember what I used to be like and what alcohol, when I drink it, allows me to do and how to act. I need to remember that. I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people, and I am not proud of that. I ended up getting wounded over during the siege of Khe Sanh. I come back to the States. I got out of the hospital. I went home. My wife wants me to stay home. We had a son born to us while I was there. My daughter's growing up. I want to get out in the bars and drink because that's where all the macho guys are out there talking about it, and I want to rap about it. Vietnam vets, you know, we can't drop that shit. We got to carry it with us forever. And so I want to get out there. I don't want to miss any of the action. And so me and my wife are having that cuss fight. I've been home less than 48 hours. She won't shut up, and I say, shut up or I'll kill you. And she don't believe me. When I'm drinking and I tell you to do something, you need to do it. Because I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. That's what macho guys do. She wouldn't shut up, and I went in the closet and I got a gun out and I walked back in that kitchen and I said, if you don't shut up, I will kill you. My daughter's standing between my legs pulling on me, telling me don't shoot her mommy. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't believe in God. I had done too many bad things to too many people. The old-timers in my home group said there's always been a higher power in your life. When I look back over my life today, I can see that's true, but back then I didn't believe it. And I'm trying to get the safety off that gun, and my daughter's pulling on me. My son's crying on the couch. It's rusted. I left it home with her. I hit a pin at the base of the receiver. The pin come out. I pushed the pin in. It was a firing pin, and the gun went off. The bullet went through my hand and down between my legs where my daughter was standing. And the bullet didn't hit her. And I'm a blessed man for that because I could have accidentally shot and killed my daughter that day in a drunken rage because my wife wouldn't do what I was saying to do. That bullet went through my hand and down there, and all she ended up with was powder burns. Shortly after that, my wife divorced me. I couldn't believe it. I fired one shot. I shot myself, and she split. I drank over that. She took my... Who's clapping? God, I wish I'd have got to AA wonderful. She divorced me. She took the kids. I drank over that. I was wronged one more time. I became a drill instructor in San Diego. I trained new recruits. I hazed them. I abused them. I thought it made them men when they left their stuff out. I stole it to teach them a lesson. I fought in the bars in San Diego. I carried a gun. 2.5 years on the drill field. I'm still macho. I got this image. I got to be validated. I got to be a man because being a man's important. So I volunteered and went back to Vietnam. I was in the infantry this time, and again, the alcohol saved my sanity. Again, I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people. I got shot up in an ambush over there. This time I come back to the States. I've been in the Marine Corps 11 years. The Marine Corps wants me to come back after lunch. I can't do that. I got a drink now to keep the demons away. I got out of the Marine Corps after 11 years. I did what macho guys was doing. I became a police officer in Southern California. Freeze! I love saying that. I just love it. That gets me hot. And I never, ever said freeze. Because if you run, we're going to beat you. That's just the bottom line, folks. And I know we got convicts in here thinking, oh, this son of a bitch, look at him. Yeah. I know. It's Mr. Peepers like me that locked you up. Think about that. Deal with it. Go home and write about it. Oh, if I offended you, I apologize. I don't mean it. The book just says you got to make amends. It doesn't say you got to mean it. So, I don't mean it. I'm just making amends. To work in the steps to the best of my ability. I'm only kidding. I haven't even got on the guys yet that are wearing earrings. Give them back to your wife or girlfriend so they got a match set again. Come on. I was kidding. No, I wasn't. But I became a police officer, and I can't tell my partner in a police car I'm afraid of the dark. I can't tell him those alleys have demons in him. If I tell him about the demons, he'll think I'm crazy. So what I do is before I go to work, I drink, and drinking takes that fear away. Now what happens is when I go on the streets and you scare me, I get violent. And I was a violent police officer in the city I worked in. I'm not proud of that. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous out in California, I go into these institutions and I make amends. I speak in there and I tell those guys what I used to be like. And I tell them what I'm trying to be like in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I try not to treat people the way I used to treat them. I try not to act the way I used to act. But I got to tell you, I'm not always successful at that. I know you can't tell, but I'm still intense. And you hear a lot of people when they get time in AA, they're walking. I tell you, I don't know if you got them in your group or not, but we got them in my home group. They're about 8 inches off the ground when they come into meetings, and they're beautiful. They're walking hand in hand with God, and they're beautiful to watch. I mean, they're floating. It's just really, it's levitation, and they're never late to work. They don't lie. They don't cuss. They don't raise hell with their kids. They're just beautiful to watch, and I got to tell you, I ain't like that. Nope. I'm not a good man today because I'm sober over 24 years. I'm not a good father today because I'm sober over 24 years. What I'm trying to be today is a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous because this is a program that keeps my head quiet. This is a program that keeps my stomach calm. This is a program that allows me to walk outside these rooms and live in a world that I have a hard time living in because I think I'm wronged and I want justice and I want what's right for me and I want people to do it my way and they don't. And Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to live out there comfortably most of the time. But I tell you what, I'm a better father and man and husband today than I was 24 and a half years ago. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be a little bit better than I was today, but I can't guarantee that. It's progress, not perfection. And if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of those people that stood up at 30 days or 60 days, I want to tell you, you don't have to do this program perfectly. I don't care what anybody in your group tells you. You just have to do it, no matter what. You have to show up. You have to get a sponsor. Not somebody that's going to talk to you about your issues. Your issues don't mean shit. You just need to know that. Because your issues are going to change about every 8 or 9 seconds. Okay? What you need is some sponsor that's going to get your butt in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Have you start working these 12 steps. Have you do that inventory and the rest of those steps. That's what you need. Somebody's going to get you committed to the meetings. Someone that's going to get you involved. Not somebody that just wants you to suck the life out of AA and leave. Just give something back. That's what you need if you're an alcoholic of my type. I don't know. Maybe you're not. But you don't have to do it perfectly. You just got to do it. And that's what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have to be what my home group wants me to be. What I have to do is find out who and what I am, be able to accept that, and start working on it. And I've been doing that for over 24 and a half years. And it's progress, not perfection. My sponsor has let me know that many times. He has called me many names. But I am still around, and I have a good life today. What happened was I got married again when I was a cop. We had a kid. My wife got pregnant. I got to be validated. I don't feel like a man. I got to be validated. So I started to have an affair with my partner. My partner's a female now. It doesn't matter what your preference is. Mine's female, so I got a female. We start to have an affair. She found out I got my wife pregnant. She took offense to that, and she shot me. What the hell are you clapping at now? Okay, it's all fun and games till you get shot. Then it's fun and games being shot. Now, I want all the guys in this meeting, if there was a woman sitting around you and she was clapping about that, and you're dating her, or you're married to her, I want you to think about it, that if you have a gun in the house and you mess up, she will cap your ass someday. So you need to be careful with that. She will shoot you and think it's funny. She shot me in the head. And I thought rather than get gunned down in a police car, I'd resign. And so I left the police department and I got a real estate license. If you think money, property, and prestige will fix it, if you're an alcoholic like me of my type, money doesn't fix it. Property doesn't fix it. Prestige doesn't fix it. I made a ton of money in real estate. I bought a brand new Cadillac and paid cash. I bought my wife one and paid cash. We put a house on a quarter acre with a swimming pool, put in a three-hole putting green. My kids wore designer clothes. I wore diamond pinky rings, gold chains, and nuggets. I had an Alano Club starter kit before they ever come out. And money didn't fix it. Money didn't take away the guilt. Money didn't take away the shame or the rage or the anger, the abuse of the family, the lying, the cheating, the stealing. Money didn't fix any of those things. If you're an alcoholic of my type, money doesn't fix alcoholism. And I made a ton of it. And at the age of 36, I stood there one day and I looked around and everything I had worked all my life to get was gone. The wife and kids had left me, the house, the car, the jewelry, the clothes, and everything I owned was in a cardboard box in the back seat of a stolen car. And that's a hell of a note for a former police officer, and I ended up homeless. I ended up on the streets. I ended up passing blood when I went to the bathroom. And I don't know if that's how you planned your life, but that damn sure ain't the way I had planned mine. And if you'd have told me that alcohol was the problem, I could have given you 100 reasons. Alcohol had nothing to do with it. This is the only disease in the world that will kill you, and your head will always find another reason for your discomfort and for the things that are going wrong. You will never look at alcohol if you're an alcoholic of my type. And I ended up very sick, and a woman I had worked real estate with seen me one day, took me to her home and cleaned me up and took me to a doctor. That doctor gave me a physical, and they turned me loose. I went back out to where I was staying on the streets. She found me. When they got the results, she took me back in. That doctor set me down, and he said, "Mr. Jones," he said, "I got to tell you," he says, "you're addicted to alcohol the way a heroin addict is to heroin. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die." He says, "You got a hole in your throat from vomiting all the time. You got cirrhosis of the liver. All the crap that's going to happen to you if you're living and eating and drinking the way I was doing it." And when he told me I would die by summer, what I felt was relief because I was tired. I'd been busy out there. It's not easy walking through people's lives. It's not easy drinking and living the way I was doing it. And when that man told me I was going to die, I shook his hand and thanked him and left his office. And the money that woman gave me to eat on, I went straight to a liquor store and bought me a fifth of whiskey and a case of beer. And I drank as hard and as fast as I could. Because if alcohol was going to kill me, I wanted to die. I used to cock my gun and put it in my mouth and I couldn't pull the trigger. And I thought if alcohol was going to do it, let's whip it on. And to make a long story short, my parents heard that I was dying on the streets and wouldn't take care of myself. And my parents had me committed. Now, if I could have got out of the restraints, I'd have went home and talked to them about it. As Lynn knows, once they strap your ass down, you ain't going nowhere, baby. It's done, but I hadn't spoke to my parents in almost 4 years. And I thought this was a big injustice. I was upset about this. But they had me strapped down and they pumped me full of vitamin withdrawals, and some of them I remember and some I don't. I remember some of the cramps and the sweats and seeing the little things that fly around those rooms that ain't there. And after about 11 days, they unstrapped me from that bed, and what they made me do is get in a van and go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know why they sent me there. I'm not an alcoholic. And when I got to the meeting, it's the same crap you people do here. It was a bunch of losers just like you. I couldn't believe my eyes. You're all hugging each other and kissing and shit and shaking hands, and it nauseated me. And what I did is I judged you, and I know nobody here judges anybody, but I judged you. And when I looked at you, I realized something. You couldn't possibly, the way you look, just like you do today, all the women, their hair's done and their clothes are clean and the guys look good and they're clean. You couldn't have lived the life I was just living. You couldn't have been the way I was. You couldn't have done the things in Vietnam I'd done. You couldn't have abused 2 wives and 4 kids. You couldn't have done the things I did, all the stealing and the crap I'd done and the people's lives I walked through because you looked too good. And what you did is they said, get your coffee, Frank, shut up and sit down. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. If you want to drink, come to AA. Come to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I heard that over and over and over. And shut up and sit down. 90 meetings and get a cup of... Shut up, we don't want to hear that. Sit down. And I thought, I'll rip your throat out. And you guys said, no, there's too many of us. You're not ripping anything. Shut up and sit down and listen. And when I left that meeting, I hated you. And I had to be brought back the next day, and I looked at you, and I realized something when I looked at you. You guys didn't make the money I made. You didn't have the house, the cars, the jewelry, the clothes, you're nothing. And you guys looked at me and said, Frank, you ain't got any of that shit now. You're homeless. Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. 90 meetings, 90 days. Go to AA. If you want to drink, come to AA. I heard that over and over and over. And I got to tell you that... What happened to me might happen to you if you don't plug into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't get yourself a sponsor, get involved in these 12 steps and the meetings and giving something back and getting commitments and finding a higher power somewhere. What happened to me might happen to you. And I don't know what type of alcoholic you are, but if you're like me, I walked out of that hospital and I stood out there in that sun in Indiana and I started crying. And all the things I'd done all my life came down and started sitting on my chest. And I thought I was having a heart attack. I thought I was being choked out. And I didn't want to take a drink of alcohol. I have not had a desire to take a drink of alcohol in 24 years and 8 months. I had a desire to commit suicide. I wanted to take my own life. Where do you go when you have no hope? Where do you go when you look and there's no light at the end of that tunnel? Where do you go when you don't have somebody to help relieve that pressure? Where do you go when you don't have a sponsor to call? Where do you go when you haven't made friends in a meeting? Where do you go when you ain't got these 12 steps? You ain't got the AA slogans, easy does it, let go, let God. Where do you go when you're doing it your way and there's no hope? What happened to me might happen to you if you don't plug into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I came back to California. I found my wife and kids up in Oregon. And we moved into a vacant garage in a 6-acre field in Newhall, California. We slept on the floor of that garage. We ate out of a styrofoam chest. The kids put water on their cereal and we ate government cheese and block bologna. And I didn't go to meetings. I didn't have a desire to take a drink of alcohol. I had a desire to commit suicide. So I didn't go to AA. And my wife and kids said I got a lot worse then than I ever was drinking. And at 6 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm driving on the Hollywood Freeway in California in a stolen car and I got a 45. I'm looking for work. I need money. I need to support that family. And I don't know about you, but this guy in front of me in the fast lane, I'm honking at him to get out of the way, and he don't get out of the way. Now, maybe here in Reno, Nevada, the drivers around here don't make you crazy. Maybe they don't bother you when you're trying to get around them, and they don't let you get around them. And I'm honking, and he don't do nothing. And I finally rear-ended him. And I chased him off the freeway, and when he stopped, I took the 45 out and walked up to his car, put the gun in his face, and I said, if you ever drive that slow again, I'll kill you. Now, I didn't want to rum and coke that day. I wanted to take that man's life. Where do you go when you get that intense and that desperate and that crazy? Where do you go if you don't have a sponsor to call that'll tell you the truth? Where do you go when you haven't made any friends in AA? You don't have a higher power. You don't know about the big book or 12 steps. Where do you go when you feel that way? At 10 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't need AA, I'm macho, I can do this without you, I don't need a sponsor, I don't need somebody telling me what to do, I can do it my way, I'm cool, I'm hip, I don't need you. I know there's people sitting in here tonight that are as tough as me that are thinking that. And I'm standing in Alpha Beta, it was a grocery store, buying me Pepsi and cigarettes. Do you think I'm going to buy my children milk for their cereal? I'm a taker. I've been a taker all my life. I'm not a giver. I'm selfish. I'm always going to get mine. I don't care about my children when I'm drinking. And I'm standing there getting Pepsi and cigarettes, and it says 10 items or less, cash only. My head's working now again. It's chattering. And it said, look at that. And look at her items. Count them. And I count her items. She's got about 13 items in this line.
Now that probably don't aggravate you folks here in Reno. But if you're like me, I'm a thinker. I don't know if you think and analyze everything, but I do. Is 12 eggs 12 items? Or is it just eggs? Is 2 half gallons of milk, is that milk or 2 items? Is 4 cans of soup soup or is it 4 items? By the time I looked at her shit, she's got about 30 of them now. And I'm ready to launch. I'm angry. I can't back anger down. And I'm ready to launch. And she broke her checkbook out. And I told her, I said, lady, you can't write a check in this line. The sign up there says cash if you'll look at it. And she turned and smiled, says, I'll be through in a minute, Sonny. I said, my name ain't Sonny. And I said, I'm not Sonny right this minute, lady, and you're not going to write a check. And I grabbed her eggs and milk. I threw that shit all over Alpha Beta. As far as I could throw it. That will get 4 large sheriffs called on you. They will want to know if you're on drugs. I didn't want a pina colada that day. I wanted to rip her blue wig off. I hated that old broad. That's how I get when I don't go to meetings. That's how I get when I don't have a sponsor. That's how I get when I haven't made any friend that I can call to relieve that pressure that builds up and that desperation. 13 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in this office trying to get a job. And this guy walks by and said, hey, Frank, how you doing? I said, that's a personal question. Why are you prying into my private life? I said, I'll tell you how the hell I'm doing, but I don't want anybody to hear this. And I grabbed him by the throat, pulled him on the desk. I started choking him, saying, how do you think I'm feeling now? I had a nervous breakdown. That won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. You're a lot tougher than I ever thought about being. You're macho, baby. I flipped out. That's not all bad, huh, Lynn? I didn't want a bourbon and water that day. I wanted to rip that man's throat out. And I got to tell you how God was working in my life when I don't believe in God. There was an active member of my home group in that office that day, and they come over and they pull my hands off this guy's throat. They laid a card down and they said, I know what's wrong with you. He said, I can't help you. You got to call this guy. And they took me back to that garage, and I had guns, and I had a hand grenade and debt cords. Shit, I was waiting for the war. And they took all that stuff out of there, and they sat with me for about 9 or 10 days, and I cried, and I didn't remember those days, and Bill told me about them later. And then they took me down to this man's office, and I sat in his office, and I cried. And I had taken life and sobriety as far as I could take it without some type of help. And what that man told me that day has saved my life and sanity up to and including tonight. This is what that man said to me that day. He said, Frank, he said, you haven't had a drink in over 13 months. He said, right this minute, he said, drinking isn't your problem. He said, what you've got right now is a living problem, and you better find a living answer to your living problem. He says, you'll probably find it in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had never heard that before. He told me if I went to these meetings, he said, there was a group of people already there that's walked down that path before you got there. Fall in behind them and do the things they're doing. He didn't tell me to bring the body and the mind will follow. If somebody's telling you that, get away from them. They're trying to secretly kill you. If you think that you can sit in these chairs and get AA and comfort by osmosis, you go home tonight and get in your garage and sit there and think about being an SUV. And when you turn into one, you come on back here at the hotel up to my room, I'll honk your horn. This is an action program. Action means you got to do something. It's not a still picture, folks. He told me I had to get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me to come up and sit in the front and listen. He told me to have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous because it's saving your life. He told me to get a higher power, and I told him I don't believe in God. He said, whoever puts that moon out at night and takes it down in the morning, pray to them. I said, I can do that. You see, I understand that kind of talk. He told me to get commitments at the meetings, and he said, a commitment means you show up unless there's a death in the family and it's yours. And I can understand that. He told me to come in here and shut my mouth during the meetings. and to have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, don't get up and wander around during the meeting. He said, the newcomers will be watching you, and we don't care if you leave, but we don't want them to. I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous that it ain't about me. I had to learn that it's our group as a whole. Our unity depends on that, my sobriety. I had to learn to think about other people. I had to start doing Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't want to do it when I got in here. I was still rebellious. I used to fight at our Wednesday meeting. We got 1,000 people there. And I had a bad attitude. I know you don't believe that. But what I did is I did what that man told me to do. I started getting commitments. And it wasn't some high-profile commitment where you pass the baskets or look cute and shit. I had to clean out the toilets and the head and sweep the floors and take the trash out and wash coffee pots. I did that the first 5 years I was sober. That don't make me wonderful. That makes me follow on my sponsor's direction. I had to change my life. I had to change how I acted and how I looked and how I talked and how I dressed, because my sponsor told me if you act and dress and be the person that came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that person had to drink and you will drink again if you don't change. He told me to go home and tell my wife and kids I loved them. I said, wait a minute, this is an honest program. I said, I don't love them. I don't know who they are. I got sober and boom, there they were. And he said, well, you've lied to them for 10 years. Go home and lie to them some more. And I went home and told my wife and kids I loved them. And I didn't love them. I was confused and dazed when I got here. I stuttered. I couldn't track chapter 5. I couldn't listen. I couldn't pay attention. But I went home and told them I loved them. And I didn't love them. I just went home and did it. Day after day, week after week, month after month. One day I walked in and told them I loved them. And something funny happened. I loved them. They had changed. I don't know what program they were going to, but it was working for them. And I'm going to tell you what I got out of that scenario right there. It doesn't matter when I'm given sponsor direction whether I want to do it. It doesn't have to make any sense to me. I don't have to think it'll work. I just have to do it. I don't have to give it any thought. I just got to go do it. And I can tell you this without a shadow of a doubt. Every direction that my sponsor's given me, or the old timers in Alcoholics Anonymous, by the time I got through doing it, I knew why. And it benefited me. And it enriched my life. And it helped settle my head down and quiet it down and help me have a little bit of self-respect and dignity. I have never to this day been told to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous that's hurt me. To this day, ever. I've only been given direction that's helped me. Have I thought it was stupid? Yes. Did I always want to do it? Nope. I thought, I'll go do this, show that old son of a bitch he don't know what he's talking about. By the time I got through doing it, he knew what he was talking about, and I felt better. That's just how it works. Like I said, that family, I got to make amends to them. I did that inventory. I made amends to that daughter I almost shot in Oceanside that day. Today, she's an attorney for a medical corporation in Indiana. And she did that in spite of me, not because of me. I'm not a good father. But what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to go to my sponsor and I'd tell him, I said, I go in their rooms and I said, the drawers are open and there's bras and panties and curling irons and the blankets and sheets are on the floor and shit and posters everywhere. It makes me crazy. And he said, whose room is it? I said, theirs. He said, shut the door. You don't have to look at it. He said, their room is none of your business. I had to learn that, so I stayed out of their life long enough to let them make their own decisions, and she made the right one. And she loves her father in spite of that, see? My middle daughter has a master's degree, and she teaches fifth grade, and she has for 8 years. Not because I'm a good father, it's because I stayed out of her life, allowed her to do what she wanted to do, not what I wanted her to do. And that's the road she picked, because in our home we had Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. You see, because the whole family had a problem. The woman I was married to at that time was an active member of Al-Anon and still is, and she is a decent, good woman. My youngest daughter went to college for 6 years, got her bachelor's degree, was going to be a veterinarian, called me one day and said, Dad, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to school 3 or 4 more years. I'm 27 year old. I said, what do you want to do then, Beck? And she said, I want to go to choice number 2. I said, what's that? And she told me. And Friday she completed her 10th week in LAPD Academy. She is going to be a Jones with a gun and a badge. I am thrilled. I am thrilled about it. And I'll tell you what, I'm proud of her. and she is running those men's in that academy their asses into the ground. Because she run 5 miles a day before she went there for years and went to the gym 4 days a week, and she is kicking butt. And I am proud of that young lady. And she did that in spite of me, not because of me. It's something she wanted to do, and I support her. Do I worry about her? Yes. Because if anything ever happens to her on the street, I'm going to be in trouble. And I know that because I love my kids. I love the hell out of my kids, and I don't want nothing to happen to her. So do I worry? Yes. But does she have a God in her life? Yes. And God will be with her in that police car. And then I had a son when I was in Vietnam, and my son spent 13 out of 17 years in state prison. He's a violent, angry alcoholic. I don't know where he got it from. Beats the hell out of me. And I found out from Johnny Harrison Clancy that he's got a God in his life the same as I do. And he'll find AA in his God's time, not my God's time. And I had to let go of that young man. And I didn't go visit him in prison. And I didn't write him. I told him, if you want a relationship with me, I'm out here. And I didn't help put you there, so the choice is yours. He now has 4.5 years sober. And that's not because of me. And he's a plumber, and he's in the union, and he's doing well, and he's off parole and probation. But you see, Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't his answer. Narcotics Anonymous was. He couldn't get this program because it ain't one alcoholic talking to another. And he didn't understand all this. And as soon as he plugged into Narcotics Anonymous and got a sponsor, he zipped along and done his thing. And he's 4.5 years sober and doing well. And I'm proud of him. And he's my son, and we talk at least once or twice a week. And you see, Alcoholics Anonymous has done that. I didn't do that because I'm not a good father. But AA has taught me to change my life at home and change how I treat people and my kids and allow them to make their own decisions. And then bad things happen in sobriety. I was 9 years sober. My father died, and I went back, and my sponsor told me to support my mom. She was married to him over 50 years, and I put my 9-year medallion in his pocket. I had a relationship with him because of the amends and the inventory I took, and he had a son, and he loved me. And, you know, I helped get his other two sons sober, and it was sad when we buried him. And then my brother, my older brother, got sober in my home, and he got a rare disease when he had 17 years, 10 months sober, and he died. And I just went to more meetings and got my strength from you people. I didn't back away from AA. I went closer to AA. I love my brother, and he died sober. And then 4 days later, my mom died. And I just came to more meetings. I just got my strength from you people. That's all. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, it gives me the ability to live outside these rooms, and that's where I have a hard time living. I don't have a hard time living in AA. I have a hard time living outside these rooms. I spent 2.5 years unemployed when I was 14 years sober. My sponsor don't let me file bankruptcy. He said, you made the bills, you're paying the bills. And I had to make phone calls to those people. And I got into it with them. Then I had to call and make amends to them. And I used to fire off the F word and shit at them. And then I told this one guy, we can't get blood out of a rock. And he said, well, we didn't give the money to a rock. And I thought, well, I laughed and said, that was a good one. And you know, and so I just had to do that. And then I finally got a job I never wanted to do, never thought about doing, and had no desire to ever do. And it helped me catch up on the bills, and I'm doing it today, and I'm successful in it, and I'm doing really well, and life is good. And then my wife of 31 years, her and I sit down and talked one day. We had just grown apart. There's no yelling, screaming, nothing. Like I said, she was a decent, good woman, a member of Al-Anon, and we had just, something just happened when I left for Desert Storm. And see, I went back in reserve in 1986. And my sponsor, I said I wanted to make up a year for the year I spent in the brig, even though I did it at the end of my enlistment. He said, submit the paperwork, and they took me. And I retired as Sergeant Major in 1999. And I get a check from the government every month. And what happened was, is me and my wife, we sit down and talked, and we had drifted apart after I'd come back from Desert Storm, and we decided to just go our separate ways. We didn't use an attorney or nothing. I gave her everything, and I took the bills. And I talk to her now and then, and I send her checks, and, you know, she's still a good woman, and she raised those daughters right. She's an excellent mother and a good member of Al-Anon, but, you know, that was kind of painful when I did that. And then I was single for a while, quite a while, and a couple of years, and I was working one day and met this lady where I worked and listened to her talk, and
ended up asking her out. She said, I don't give my phone number out. And I said, well, how in the hell do I get in touch with you? And she gave me her email address, and I didn't have a computer or know how to use it, so I gave it to Baby to email her. And her and I got together, and on 12/12, we got married. And she didn't know what AA was, and she went to hear me speak. She still married me. And driving home, she said, do they write that stuff down for you to say, or did you really do that stuff? And I said, well, in a general way, I did, yeah, I guess. And she came to my home group, and she met Clancy and Johnny and a lot of the old-timers there. And she said, oh, they're all nice people. And I said, no, they're not. They're not nice people. They're drunks. They're asses. They're bad people. And she said, I really like them. They're really nice. And I'm not going to give her the antidote. And what I'm telling you now is I have a good life. I've had a good life since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, through good times and bad times, because AA works. And the hardest thing for me to get through is success. I have a hard time with success. It makes me think I want to back away from AA and get busy in that successful job. And what I have to do is maintain my commitment to this program. I still go to 4 or 5 meetings a week, and I have commitments at those meetings because I don't know what I'm going to stop doing. My head won't tell me I can stop everything. So I just keep doing this deal, and I wanted to be macho when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be like all you other tough guys and everything. And I found out from the old-timers in my home group what macho is, and you ruined it for me. You just absolutely ruined it. Being macho is driving a car with a driver's license. It's having car insurance if you're going to drive a car. It's not having to validate yourself with another woman when you're married. It's coming to meetings early and staying late. It's never saying no to an AA request. It's sticking your hand out to the newcomers. It's being an example when you don't want to be an example. You see, you ruined it for me. It's treating my children and my wife the way I want to be treated. It's acting decent with self-respect out on the streets outside of AA meetings. And you guys have done that for me. Today I have a good life. And if all I got out of the life I have is what I got today, I've been overpaid. I want you to know that. You see, this morning, I woke up in a clean, dry bed. I don't know about you, but when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't waking up in a clean, dry bed. Before I came down here tonight, I took a shower, I shaved, I got on clean clothes. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't showering and shaving and wearing clean clothes. I was living in a garage and sleeping on the floor. Tonight I sat down and ate dinner at that banquet with a bunch of lovely ladies and one goofy Eric. And, you know, when we sit there, we ate, and it was decent, and it was a conversation with dignity. It was about Alcoholics Anonymous and about living life, and it gave me a good feeling, and I didn't puke that food up with a lot of stomach bile and alcohol behind it. So if the only 3 things I got out of this deal was that bed, that shower, these clothes, and that meal tonight, you know what? I've been overpaid today. And that's a good deal right there. And if you're new or used tonight, you don't have to remember anything I've said, because it ain't important to anybody sitting in this room but me. I need to remember what I used to be like. I need to remember how very fortunate I was to have found my home group and my sponsor. And I need to remember what my life is like today, because I'm a blessed man. I have a lot of gratitude. It's easy to lose that gratitude, and it's the hardest thing to get back. But you know, when I speak and I listen to this, and I listen to Lynn, and I listen to you people share, and I look at you today, and I know the road that most of you have traveled, I know that we're lucky people. And I know that we got a second chance at life, and not everybody gets that. And I don't want to piss that away. I got to tell you that. I love my life today. I got a quiet head and a calm stomach. But if you're new or used, I think the only thing you should remember was read to you tonight out of chapter 5. And it's that very first line. And I think that first line of chapter 5 says it all. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thanks for having me.